Hello and welcome. I am Afua Prince, and I am on a mission to reflect on beauty, truth, and justice. And this is the podcast presenting evidence that God still loves women and writers. So today we're here. I'm talking with Dr. Malifa Love Asante, and we were having a conversation about many things, but one of the things we're gonna shift our focus to right now is the love of my life. Laundry.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you were getting ready to tell me something.
I was. When you mentioned laundry before as grounding you and maybe connecting you into the lives of everybody who's stirred over a batch of dirty clothes and tried to clean them, and then where you go in the process of cleaning. Several things like really just whooshed up. One of them was my mom, and in the basement, half the basement was her laundry room.
Okay.
And half the basement was my father's office. And in her laundry room, it was like a laboratory, because at the time, laundry was not as mechanized as it is now. So there were these types of solutions to do this. There was bluing, which I never understood. Even now, maybe I don't.
How it works.
But yes. There was starch in the little bars that you had to, like, then transform from the bars into something that allowed you to starch your clothes. There was, like, an industrial ironer. Iron, I guess, so that, you know, when you put them clothes in and it goes around this sort of cylindrical thing. And she, for her, bourgeois respectability began with laundry. And even though it was definitely an uplift kind of thing, the process itself was so down to earth. So, like, the sink was not a nice sink in and of itself. It was like an industrial sink. And then, you know, she had her shelves with all these different things on there, and that different clothes went on different lines, because some lines were closer to the furnace, and that would do this or that or the other, and some things needed to dry slowly. And then she had another line outside, and there was a door that led outside to that clothesline. And we lived on a very public street. So it was always interesting to me what was allowed to go out and air and what was required to stay in the basement and quiet. And we also had a dryer, but she believed, part of her upbringing was that some things needed the air in order to finish out a cycle. Like, it had to be in touch with the sunshine. So seeing her doing the laundry in a very, she's always meticulous about it. She didn't like me to do the laundry because I didn't understand what I was doing. And it wasn't, she didn't say that in a way that was insulting or demeaning, but that she understood that the process was deeply cultural, spiritual, and that it allowed her to feel like she was bringing order. And she was a person who cared very much about order. And life is so disorderly, and I think was hard for her because it was disorderly. But in that laundry room, she could make things come out the way she wanted them to. So that was the first thing I thought
about. So where do you think she learned this?
Oh, very. I think very much. She grew up in Danville, Virginia.
That's where my dad's people are from. Halifax.
Oh, yes, it is. Very close by. So I'm convinced that she was bringing part of that story into her Washington, D.C. home. So there were many things that I would say my mother was an aspirant. She's very much a race woman. So like the bourgeois respectability has had a lot of facets to it in that she wasn't an elitist. Like she talked to any and everybody and socialized in the sense like you can come into my house, you can sit at my table, I can feed you, just about anybody. So she had very keen ideas about what we as a family and what we as Black people needed to do in the world. And one of the things that she thought both family and race was like being presentable. And it wasn't being presentable for white people. It was like just being presentable as if just on the human level, that how you enter into the world helped define the space in a particular way. So if everybody comes in there clean and pressed, that did something to the environment.
That's really, there's so much about what you're saying that resonates with me. One of the things that you said a moment ago that struck me is that the basement was divided, right? And there's this office for your father, and then your mother's workspace is a laundry space.
Right.
So how did that, can you say more about that dynamic?
Well, because it was an active office. It was had a dental practice. So it was rare that she and he were working at the same time. But now that you mentioned it, I have memory of when she would be in there running water and doing stuff. And so now it makes me think, was that her way of commenting about who was in the space or how she felt about my father at that moment? So largely, she yielded to him during the week. But on Saturdays, there was no question. The basement was hers to define.
So the entrance to the basement was shared.
Well, there was a there was an entrance to the basement off the street.
Okay.
Into a very small waiting room, and then there was a door from the waiting room into the office, and then there was a door from our kitchen down to the basement, and then there was a door at the bottom of the steps where you could pause. Because when you step next, you'd be stepping into my father's office and you had to walk around the x-ray machine to go into the basement. So you always pause there to hear whether there was a patient in there or what was going on or if he was between patients.
So that is an interesting kind of almost harsh division within the space of the home between what's considered work and what's considered private home life.
Right.
So in terms of the physical location, this home, was it built that way when you all arrived or was it designed that way by your family? Or
I think part of the reason that they sought out this house because they had to engage in a lawsuit to actually occupy the house.
Was that because of the color?
Yes, it was. I think the idea originally was my father taught at Howard University Dental School and wanted to practice, but there wasn't an investment in like having a separate office. The idea was we'll get one place that will serve two purposes. And then actually, if he had wanted to, he could have walked to Howard. That's how close we lived. So I think, yes, and when I'm the sink in the basement surely was old. So I think the setup was there when we first entered. And sometimes when when I worked for my father and had to develop x-rays, I did some of that work in my mother's laundry room. Mm-hmm. But it was always clear it was her laundry room.
Right.
That he had a little space where fluids could be kept to do the x-rays.
So one of the things, I mean, there's a lot of what, is there so many things that you're saying that are triggering memories and mm-hmm. thoughts of my own. One of the things that you said that really struck me too is about this presentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was reflecting in a moment in one of my episodes, I wish I could remember which one,
mm-hmm.
Where that's kind of the work I have done for my family, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways I served my family. And I asked myself to meditate on the amount of time I've reflected on the underwear situation mm-hmm. in the family. It's like, right. I know if somebody needs clean underwear because mm-hmm. I'm that in mm-hmm. tune with what's going on with everybody's clothes situation.
Right.
But part of that is, I mean, the underwear is the most, this thing nobody sees, thankfully. But the whole work of it is about saying, I know this child has to go out into the world mm-hmm. and this child has to see X, Y, and Z person. And in order for them to be acceptable,
right.
these clothes have to be
yes.
a certain way.
Right.
Yeah. And that, and I that to me, that was deeply imparted by my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I remember dingy white socks drove her crazy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was growing up, there were no dingy white socks in our home.
Truth. No, that's the
and
truth.
And I don't know how she got the socks not dingy.
So not just white, but like
white.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was like a comment to her mm-hmm. about, it was, it seemed to be, if this white socks were dingy, that was saying something about the status of
yes,
our family.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I remember distinctly my mother appreciating bright white on dark skin. Mm. She like loved the look of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the white, whatever it was, you know, if it was socks,
mm-hmm.
if you remember the little lace socks that you wore with your patent leather shoes?
Yeah.
They had to be folded down
mm-hmm.
at a particular way
yes.
so that they fell along the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a white outfit, it had to be ironed within an inch of its life.
Yeah.
Like, white and wrinkles, no.
Right.
I remember at some point where I had a, you know, a cotton white dress that always stayed wrinkled. It didn't matter if you ironed it. It resisted being ironed because of the type of cotton. She was like, you have to take that off.
Yeah, you can't wear that.
You can't wear that. She says, you look like nobody takes care of you.
Yeah.
So I think also, and she was not an effusive person emotionally, but it really mattered to her that in the world, my brother and I appear to be persons who are cared for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Where do you think that? I mean, I guess it seems basic on a certain level. Mm-hmm. Of course, people want to be cared for. But what do you think? What do you think that that's cultural in a particular
way?
How so?
I do because I at the time I was growing up, other children came to school wrinkled. Something may have been sort of clean, but not really. Or they would talk about getting something out of the, you know, they ran out of clothes, so they had to get something out of the clothes hamper. Mm-hmm. And somebody let them do that.
Right? Because even as you're saying that, I'm like, really?
Yes.
Out of the hamper?
Right.
Before it was cared for?
Exactly.
No, you don't get to do that.
So I think that one of the consequences of white supremacy is that you can be white in the world and kind of look any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody may look askance, but they won't not help you, not serve you, not recognize you.
Mm-hmm.
So just like white supremacy allows individuality for white people
mm-hmm.
and not for black people. Like, you're always representing your race.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was part of the mix that when my brother and I, or my father, or my mother for that, went into the world, you went not as an individual, but a representative of your race. Mm. And she never felt that Black people were inferior. She always felt Black people were superior. Mm-hmm. And it was important to represent that. Mm-hmm. And for her as a mother, when somebody saw her children, that they would know those children are cared for. Which extends to, like, the ridiculous amount of Vaseline that went on your legs and your elbows.
You're bringing back so many memories because you had to be slathered down.
Yes, you had to be shiny, which I really appreciate now. I couldn't stand it as a child because it's just like, But now I do appreciate that when you are well oiled, your skin just looks, I mean, you know, not to the point of greasy, but it looks different.
Yeah.
Your clothes look different on you.
Yeah.
So it's like you are always ready for a photograph or to be gazed on.
Yeah.
So,
That's really interesting. I remember my disappointment because my daughter, when she was little, of course, she couldn't say anything. I dressed her, and she didn't have a choice. But I remember the joy of putting on those socks with the lace around the edge and then folding it down so that the lace fell right at the ankle.
Yes.
And then you had the patent leather T-strap shoes.
Yes.
And I remember this child getting to a point where she didn't want those socks, but she couldn't fold her socks down.
Right.
And I'm like, but socks are supposed to be folded down. Mm-hmm. And it was an experience that taught me that I was aging, for one.
Right.
But also that it felt like a sense of loss to me.
Right.
Because I grew up, there were no, and I couldn't debate with my mother about these things.
No.
No.
No one did not do that.
There's not a debate, right? They're like, this is the way you wear your clothes.
Right.
And then undergarments were extraordinarily important.
Yes.
You have to have the slip on because the clothes
don't
hang.
But not hanging.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. No. And then there would be some woman who would lean over and whisper, your slip is hanging.
Right.
And then you rush off to the ladies' room and you take
care of that. To adjust yourself.
To adjust yourself. But all of these kinds of things, it's like we don't have this anymore.
I don't think so. And I feel very much that for my mother, who suffered in her life in various ways, I mean, as we all do, I don't think extraordinary suffering, but life is challenging, that not only was it about presenting, but it was about her designing the world. Like, I recognized at some point I was her canvas. Mm. And when I recognized that, I stopped feeling antsy about her hand on me in that way. Mm-hmm. It was a sense of, like, the house, how we were, how our clothes, all that was her design. So
do you think that's gendered? We talked about race a bit. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's gendered, her sense of design?
Oh, I do think that for her generation of Black women, it was very important, who were in, who thought about uplift in a particular way, that yes, the order and design were tied to identity. And that as a woman, as a mother, you ensured that, you know, your fingerprints would be, that you're, and I don't want to say that because it makes it sound like you're smudging something and that would be awful, but that your hand in the lives of your family members were evident.
Yeah, I wonder, given the nature of slavery, my people were enslaved. Mm-hmm. And that meant that they did not have a say-so over their children in some really important ways.
Right.
And I think that that is extremely important in my lineage.
Right.
Right. So that might be part of why I feel this sense of loss.
Yes.
When I'm like trying to impress and imprint.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter is resistant because she has her own mind and her own thoughts. And she's not really keyed into this same sense of which you identified as design. Mm-hmm. But for me, is I think when I was in that moment, I was thinking about tradition.
Yes.
Or it felt like a sense of heritage, right?
Absolutely. And I think in my parents' generation, they were still right at the edge of a segregated world. Mm. And looking back, all the people around us, no matter their station, embraced this idea that you were part of a community where you looked good to represent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what you're talking about is the tradition is right there, because her mother did the same thing, from what I can tell by photographs that I see mm-hmm. of her family members, my aunts and uncles. I also remember my mother telling me when I did object, you'll get a turn.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I was like looking forward to that turn.
Yeah.
But not thinking that as integration changed how we looked at the world and looked at ourselves, that some of those things that I don't even know the right word, that we wouldn't find them as necessary any longer, or that the next generation would feel, no, don't do that for me, I'll do it for myself, that that's part of my independence, that it wouldn't feel, okay, I'll get a turn, so yeah, I'll play along with my parents' turn.
Mm-hmm.
So now the turn thing is over.
It's over. It is.
It's over.
It totally is over.
And I think right now, if someone could see, someone who's maybe 20 now could see what my mother, how much she invested in our being presentable and looked loved, they'd be like, why would you do all that? Because it was hours and hours worth of work.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I mean, there was a washing machine, but there were some things that could only be washed on a scrub board or only washed by hand. And that dry cleaning was a highly selective thing. You only put things like, you know, that you couldn't manage in a dry cleaners. And then even when you went to a dry cleaner, you were going to a black dry cleaner, when in that day it seems pretty much done also. Because I remember when we did go to the dry cleaners that there was an understanding about when something was right and when something was not. So if you pointed out, well, this isn't like this, they'd be like, oh, yes, let me fix it. It wasn't any kind of argument, because people understood the
meaning.
They understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this issue of, or this idea of design, which I deeply relate to, because my grandmother was not an educated person. But the amount of care she put into presentations, I mean, the way she would say it was, you look like somebody throwed away.
Yes.
Which was like, oh, absolutely
yes.
not.
Yes.
We're not doing that.
Right.
And she was the kind of person who, I mean, she was really, she had canvas tennis shoes, and she wore them to the point that her big toe poked a hole in it, she would cut a design that cut out the hole to make it appear deliberate.
Right.
But she wasn't going to throw the shoe away if the sole was good, because she was going to buy a good shoe that had a good support system in it, and then she was going to wear it until it couldn't be worn anymore.
Right, exactly.
So she was really frugal, and it wasn't about all kinds of appearances. I mean, it was always about appearance, but certain things mattered and certain things didn't matter, and it was only the most important things that mattered. And for her, it was like the support in the shoe, and whether the white is white or whether the iron is crisp, the starch, the pleat is precise.
Yes.
And I do think that connects to a sense. You had mentioned the word chaos, and you said so much was chaotic. Can you think or talk more about that part of it?
Well, I do think that because of when my parents were at their prime in the world, that there was still some question mark when you went certain places, how you would be treated, what might come at you, what you might have to deal with, how you'd have to assert yourself or not assert yourself. So I think that, plus just the regular stuff that comes with living, you know, when you love somebody or when you love your children, wherever relationships are, your own mortality or being prone to illness, that it's just like there's stuff out there. Mm-hmm. So while appearance and presentability were very at top of her list, bringing order to the mayhem was also important. So in the house, everything had its place. Put it back where it goes. Mm-hmm. But the same thing was true of my grandparents. Things have their place. Mm-hmm. And that it was important to preserve that sense of order in the home, because in the world, you can't expect to discover it or to find it when you're, depending upon where you are. So it makes sense to me about your grandmother and the shoe, because I have a lot of memories where something was wearing out, but you don't want to look worn, or for my mother's phrasing, something the cat drug in. Mm-hmm. That was her equivalent.
Right.
So using your hands in a way to make things as lovely as you could. I just don't remember my male relatives caring in that way. Now, with tools, yes, everything went back. Mm-hmm. And they would, you know, yield to a woman straightening a tie or brushing their shoulders or straightening their jackets on them. They would yield to that because they knew that's what comes with the package.
And it's a type of caring.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a type of caring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The clothes, when they're hanging up mm-hmm. on the line, mm-hmm. what did they look like?
Well, you know, she had a particular clothespin method. Mm-hmm. She also had, which I still don't know the reason why, she had some clothespins that pinched and some clothespins that just had little slots in them. Mm-hmm. And different things got different clothespins. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I think at that point I just thought, oh, it just didn't matter. So, you know, the on the line would be in non-personal items, like socks could go on the line outside. Mm-hmm. Things that if somebody saw them, it wouldn't feel like they were looking under your clothing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The socks just didn't matter. Nylons never went outside. I remember that. Underwear never went outside. Only certain sheets went outside. So the idea of airing your laundry, and how we use that metaphorically, mm-hmm. that had an actual
manifestation.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
That only certain kinds of laundry could be aired outside, unless you were in the country, and then you could put anything you wanted to
on the line.
Mm-hmm, if you were like not on a, if your home was somewhere that was not secluded, but just like there wasn't a bunch of people driving by all the time.
So did you take away from your childhood this practice?
Are
you?
No.
So no. How do you feel about laundry?
I don't like laundry because I really, when I do it, I don't have that time. I always feel like I'm not doing it right. Because I have just such an experience of being with her in that room. In fact, there was a little chair that I could stand on when I was very small and watch her. So she wanted me to learn, but I don't have those hours. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I do have them, but I can't find them yet in my life. So I always feel like I'm halfway doing laundry.
So it's the sense of not being able to accomplish the task as...
Right.
That's what makes it disappointing.
Yes. Because there was the master.
Yeah.
I studied under the master.
Yeah.
But I will never, I don't care how much longer I lived, I will not be able to do what she did, because there were like generations tied into what she was doing. It wasn't my mother deciding on her own. You could feel, this is how it's done. This is what my mother did. This is what my grandmother did. This is what my great-grandmother did in their way and given the tools. And there's so many other things, so many different kinds of washing machines, dryers.
Mm-hmm.
I do well if I sort clothes, which I know would be an abomination to my mother when I put... Why are you putting those color things, dark colors in with medium colors? Like all the color ranges should be sorted
yeah.
and handled differently. And the different weights of things and what towels and washcloths get. And you don't wash your underwear with. I was like, I know it was beautiful, but I can't replicate it.
Yeah.
So I don't like it because I always feel reminded in the ways that my mother was just more caregiving than I'm able to do.
Yeah. No, I get that. And I don't remember standing on a stool by my grandmother, but I do remember, one, she was always washing. Mm-hmm. It was like there was no office in the basement to prohibit her from the time.
Right.
She was just there all the time. Mm-hmm. She washed on every day, I think, and Sundays too.
Yes.
It was every day. And my mother, I do remember my mother fussing.
Mm-hmm.
Mama, you don't have to wash laundry every day. And my grandmother's like, I'm your mother. You're not my mother.
Exactly.
So I don't have to listen to you. And she did wash every day. Mm-hmm. So I think... Because if I ever wanted to interact with her, she was probably somewhere. She at some point in the day, she's in the basement doing laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my exposure came that way.
Right.
And for whatever reason, me and one of my brothers, we just got it. You know, we got a lot of... I too studied at the foot of a master. I did not get what she's got.
Right.
But we got the passion for laundry from her.
Yes.
But there's something also very unforgiving about laundry.
Yeah.
That doesn't fit in our lives today.
Right.
And... it seems always to be in conflict with some more important thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So you are a professor, you're a writer, you're a creative person, you're an artist. Does laundry
sink
or not sink?
I domestically, I care very much about a clean environment. Oh my goodness, do I care. When it comes to laundry, however, when you're cleaning your house, you have to be at it. You can't like stop in the middle of the task because then it will take you 2 days to get through everything you need to do. But with laundry, you have at least the technology now. You put it in a machine, you can go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I go do something else, particularly if I'm writing, those clothes are going to be in there
for two more days.
Well, yep, sometimes it's really a long time, which is why I've come to use vinegar really religiously.
Yeah.
So that there is something acid in there to forestall the growth of mildew.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for her, it was a system. You didn't turn away from the system. Like, you didn't go take breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Even it would have to be everything was on the line, where it was outside or inside. You were all done. Then you could go occupy yourself with other things. My grandmother was a little different. Where I spent most of the time with her was out in the country, although they had a home in Roxbury in Massachusetts. she had, it was very late in her life before she had a washing machine. So there was a sink and a scrub board, and she did small loads every day. And in the summer, we would go hang things up together because she was in the country and didn't care who mm-hmm. saw what. Mm-hmm. And she had the kitchen, and they had built their home. So she had had an ironing board, not like a contraption, but just a board with cloth wrapped around it, positioned so she could watch her stories while she ironed. Mm. But when I watched her doing that, she was mostly ironing, and occasionally she'd look up and see what was happening on Search for Tomorrow or something like that. Mm. So it was more like background than it was, because she cared too about everything being just a certain way, so that when you folded it, which that also
is a whole nother
thing, that you would iron and then fold. I never grasped that, because it's like, aren't you putting lines into what, and then you aren't you gonna? But anyway, most of their clothes would go hang in closets, and when you looked in those closets, that always had some cedar block or something in there. Clothes just stood like a line of soldiers.
Yes. Yeah.
Looking ready for action. Mm-hmm. I so appreciate that. And I do try to maintain that part where the closet looks like you're ready. Mm-hmm. You're not digging in things. Mm-hmm. There's not this and that. You have them color-coded or however. There's order when someone opens your closet, including you, that the order of things is right there. So
I have one last question.
Okay.
That division, again, back in the basement, dentist space, laundry space,
right.
That stark line, that place where you come and pause, that kind of liminal space right. where it's like, do I get to cross this threshold?
Exactly.
Metaphorically, how does it work in your life? Do you have a harsh line like that, or are the seams more fluid between your work, what you consider your work, and this other more private work?
Well, that's such a good question. I think that it's not as stark. I do have my study, which It is a bit of a fortress. I try not to make it that, but between the number of books I have in there and how I have it organized, it can seem like when you're on the other side of the door that you should knock for sure because of how things are set up. Mm-hmm. But in terms of how I work, there's so much to do domestically and professionally that I constantly feel as if I'm moving through it very fluidly. Mm. And that if there were stark lines, I'd be in trouble. It would take more energy of thought to transition between the private and the less private realms.
So this fluidity, does it then not seem at odds? The work, the domestic task.
Right. No, it doesn't seem at odds. Mm. And probably the one thing I am confident that I took away from my time with the master is that cleanliness is next to godliness. So I'm always striving for that in whatever I'm doing, that it'll take me closer so that it doesn't seem as burdensome. I don't feel like woman's work, in part because I have a partner who shares in doing all of that, but it doesn't seem now at this point in my life that there are these roles that I'm fulfilling. It's just one role.
That's good.
Okay.
I'm glad to hear all of that. It really brings back all the memories, you know, the patent leather, the Vaseline, because you couldn't have those ashy knees, the white dresses. We didn't even talk about ribbons.
And having them to be ironed. Right. And that once you wear a ribbon, you need to wash it in the sink.
So we're here with Dr. Malifa Love Asante, and our opening paragraph pick comes from her today. And so what will you read for us today?
I'll be reading Geography from E. Ethelbert Miller's How We Sleep on the Nights We Don't Make Love.
And what about this catches your attention?
Well, Ethelbert is really central to my life as a poet. He allowed me to be among the Ascension poets when he was doing that series. To this day, I can write Ethelbert about a question I have as a writer, and he's always quick to respond and offer his best advice to me. So I feel like he ushered me in. So
wonderful. Okay.
The poem Geography. My 4-year-old daughter comes home from school with a map of the world. This is Africa, she tells me. This is where we come from. Daddy, watch me color the rest of the world. I watch her color Europe red and all of the Atlantic. I try to encourage the use of blues and greens, but she refuses. She sees the world with her own brown eyes. My daughter stops coloring and prints her name at the top of her map. Jasmine, she says, like a young Columbus, her mouth round with wonder.
It's beautiful.
It is.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been another exhibit from the podcast presenting evidence that God still loves women and writers. Featuring music by Talitha Gabrielle. I am Apua Prince. Until next time.